You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is May 20th, Wednesday, 2020. It's 5/20/2020. It's no wonder it's been one of those days, Dave. Good afternoon.
And it's hump day to boot.
Oh, boy. Maybe that's why I was feeling like, I just wasn't getting anything done today. Anyway, we had a nice day in gold today. It got weak again throughout the day, but it's still holding at $1,749.60, up $3.90. Silver was up 19 pennies at 17.63. Platinum was up 25. 861, and palladium was up $49 at 2,170. The USDX today was down 0.46 at 99.13. Crude oil was up $1.73 at 33.69. And of course, the markets were all happy once again today. The Dow was up 358 points. It took back its loss from yesterday, 24,565. The NASDAQ was up 190 at 9,375. The S&P was up 48 at 2,971. 10-year yield, 0.68%. And let's see, the euro was stronger, 110. European markets liked we're on that V recovery, Dave. So we have a lot to celebrate, and we're going to be talking about that when we come back from the after the first break, as it's Wednesday, and we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs, and I do believe she's here waiting. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melanie, and hi, Dave.
Hello.
I thought we'd talk about gardens. I know a lot of people out there do these gardens, you know, and you know, like to grow a few tomatoes or maybe even have a big spread for the neighborhood community garden. So we've heard a lot of reports that when humans connect with nature, you know, they get out of the city, their health is positively impacted. But now there's this study from Princeton University that is reporting that when we grow plants, our health is also improved. So humans are meant to connect with nature and not just to be cooped up inside, because when that happens, our health diminishes. So, and this this shelter in place is a good example of that. So city versus country, when they analyze how people do, whether you're a city slicker or a country cowboy, all humans need to connect with nature from time to time. So this report, also from Clemson University, that was done in April 2016, said that people who live in cities need to visit green parks. And guess what? The size of the parks affect well-being. So city zoners, they know this, and they need to set up their projects where they have greenways even expand on them, because a lot of times they're kind of chintzy on the green space. Now, the quality of human life will depend on making sure there's this balance between greenery and concrete. So when your city planners get together, what they do is they realize cities produce stress. You know, there's a lot of hectic activity, and it produces a lot of stress. So trees and grass and plants soften the harshness of the urban environment. So the folks at the Clemson, when they did their study, they found that just having little strips of green grass or a tree-lined street isn't enough for well-being. And they say we need adequate-sized parks, and it has to be part of the city planning. So I know here in Mecklenburg County, they've been trying to improve on that. I don't know about where you guys are at, but there's not enough green space, and they're trying to incorporate that in. And as the city expands, what they wind up doing is, oh, let's take this park and put a skyscraper there. But then we don't have the green space. You know what I'm saying? And they're saying the size of the parks matter. The Clemson study, they say a good-sized park in the midst of a city preserves not only recreation and tourism, but also the health of everybody in the city, and it makes them happier. So going to the park, they say, relaxes people, reduces their stress. And their research was published in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine and also in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health. So also got published in the Journal of the Public Library of Science. So green space around cities and planners that plan for that, they include these sprawling designs, and it's often referred to as an ecosystem service. So when you hear this, I often wonder of inner city public schools, which really have very little or even zero green space around them. Have you ever seen the pictures of some of those New York City schools and inner city? It's just all this concrete everywhere. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Yeah, so some hospital, actually, some hospital complexes also have very little green space. Some of the older ones don't have the green space, and they need to improve on that for patient health. Also, most cities are planning, they're planned out on grids. If you ever notice maps, like I know Washington, D.C. is planned out on this grid. And according to these greenery experts, a park should be a straight shot walk from businesses, from schools, and neighborhoods. So this is suggesting that most American cities don't have enough green space or enough parks. I don't know. Do you have, how many parks do you have near you, Mel? Yeah.
Well,
can you count them on your one hand?
Well, we've got the beach.
So, oh,
that's a
really
big
park. Excuse me.
We do have small. We do have small parks though, and we have the national and the state parks.
Yeah,
But
I think the beach trumps that. You know, Well, here is a quote from Lincoln Larson. He's a professor at Clemson University Park Recreation. He says, our research is suggesting parks have a unique capacity to enhance physical health and foster a sense of community. Park quantity, that is measured by the percentage of city area covered by public parks, was constantly considered among the strongest predictors of well-being. It is not just parks, but every type of urban green space really takes in, and it matters, and it becomes a public health issue, and it does foster happiness, which I thought was interesting. So let's get to the happy garden, too, because in May 2020, Princeton University reported on the home garden. It not only provides food, but it also provides emotional well-being. So gardeners, they say, are happy people. And gardening was measured to be as pleasurable as dining out or hiking or experiencing a walking trail. Now, gardening tends to relax the body and the mind, and it didn't matter who was gardening or where the gardening was taking place, because you can have a rooftop garden in a very, you know, a city environment. So gardeners experience kind of the same joy as if they were gardening in rural areas. So there's something about growing plants, you know, and just nurturing the plants, mm-hmm. you know, something different about that. So anyway, so economic classes have been fostered, and they're also saying it didn't matter. Poor, rich, it didn't matter. If you had a garden, they still garnish the same well-being that all gardening brings. So if you were in a rich city or poor city, it didn't matter. Now, out of the 15 other activities they looked at, gardening actually topped the list, especially for women and also people in general who derive emotional well-being from nurturing plants. So there is something about gardening, growing edible plants, that is sustaining, rewarding, and it seems to empower the individual. Now, teaching young children how to garden is also a wonderful experience, and it's something a child never really forgets. So the research on this did get published in the Journal of Landscape and Urban Planning, in which the article is quoting, gardening could provide the health benefits of fresh air, fresh fruits and vegetables, promote physical activity, and support emotional wellness, which can reinforce sustainability and healthy behavior. So according to this study out of Princeton, how people garden didn't matter. It still produced the same effect, whether it was a community garden project, a family garden, or maybe a solo retired person doing the gardening. The end result was the same. You got emotional wellness, and it applied even if you were planting ornamental or flower gardens. So gardening has just got a whole bunch of pluses there on an emotional level. And most gardeners that I know, they like to share their produce with other people. You know, if you have a vegetable garden, you grow too much. You can't possibly eat it and can it all. So they're sharing with neighbors, friends, coworkers. And that giving element also adds to their well-being, which is very nice, you know. Mm-hmm. Also, if you're a gardener, I don't know if you are, Melanie, but gardeners are problem solvers. They are.
Yes.
Gardeners like solving gardening problems and then sharing what they find with other people. For instance, if you're growing some squash and if you ever grow squash, you battled the squash beetle. And people say it looks like a stink bug, but it's not exactly a stink bug. It looks kind of like it, but not exactly. So squash beetles are a problem, and people like to keep their gardens organic, so they don't want to use a lot of chemical sprays and dusts and things like that. So when you find something organic, and preferably right in your kitchen pantry, it is a godsend. So a gardening tip is if you got squash beetles, to take some self-rising flour. It has to be self-rising, okay? And you shake it on the squash leaves so the beetles will eat the flour as they're kind of munching on the leaves. And then the yeast that's in this flour kind of, bloats up in their stomach and it's got a deadly action to the squash beetle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's kind of a feeling of accomplishment when you solve a challenge like that with just an everyday item that you have in your home that's organic and it's not chemical toxicity or anything. Also, what they found, according to the time people put in for their gardens, according to the Princeton study, the average gardener in their study tended to their gardens about 90 minutes per week. And they compared that time that they also involved in other activities during the participants of their study. So some of the gardeners also like to bike or walk, but they would do biking about 19% of the time, like 30 minutes, and walking about 85% of the time, like 40 minutes. So gardening got more attention from people that had other activities they like to do. So all this research is just highlighting that home gardening is among the top five activities in terms of how meaningful an activity felt to people while they were engaged in it. Meaningful moments when you go out there and you plant something. Now, all this research, according to this team of researchers on this report, the people who garden get a kick out of producing their own food. They produce food in their gardens, and it makes them feel empowered and secure. They have that self-sustainability element, and it gives them gives their brain a positive emotional chemical element, boosts the person's well-being and level of contentment. So this gardening high, if you will, affects what was highlighted in a 2017 research by Phipps Conservatory. It was the Botanical Gardens out of Pittsburgh. They launched this big home garden project, and they happened to notice that 70% of the participants are still gardening today. So that was from 2017. So 3 years ago, 70% are still doing the gardening. Amazing. Okay.
Yes.
I know. So when you go to purchase a home, it's real important. If you're a gardener, if you like to do that, real important in an urban environment. If you're a garden enthusiast, it's real important to check your property covenants, homeowners association, and town ordinances regarding gardens. Even if in a more rural setting, even if you were near, let's say, lakes, it's really good to check these things out, because most of us would really not have any objection to a garden, but you'd be surprised what can restrict these types of activities. Lake communities, for instance, we got a lot of lakes around where I'm at, Mel, and they don't like tall tomato plants and other tall garden plants that will obstruct lake views, even if the lake view is from the street. Okay, if you're just driving down the street. I know, it's kind of ridiculous, but you know, it's an ordinance or a restrictive covenant, and so you got to know these things. So always check if gardens are permitted, and any rules that are associated with them. It's, you know, beware also of ambiguous wording regarding gardens, and get it in writing from the governing power over them, so that you can have your garden, the type of garden you want, before you even buy a property there. I ran into that looking at homes recently. I was looking at home, and they had some ambiguous wording about gardens. And when I called the board over there, I guess HOA, I asked them, I said, okay, well, so what do you exactly mean by this? This is quite ambiguous. And they wouldn't answer it. They would just point you back to the restrictive covenants, you know. So I think it's like open to interpretation, and is and that's kind of not what I like to hear, because you could get into trouble with anything with that. Also, you know, now with the pandemics issues.
Yeah, but after a while, Wendy, you just figure out a way to get around it anyway. You just bribe your neighbors.
As someone once told me, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission sometimes.
Right. Well, yeah, give them a basket full of tomatoes, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, with the recent pandemics, gardening has hit a huge high. Actually, there's a lot of places that sell a lot of gardening materials and seeds and stuff. They ran out. I'm not kidding. They ran out of supplies. They had no seeds. They had very limited supplies. And with the mail being a bit slower, they had everything on back order.
I think that's called boredom.
Well, and you, yeah, well, and you couldn't even get heirloom seeds. They were all sold out. So learning to garden and canning fruits and vegetables makes people feel a lot more secure during pandemics when you go to the grocery store and things are low. I've got some apple trees I cultivated over the winter holidays. I took some apple seeds from organic apples that we were eating, and what you do is you take a paper towel and you wet it, and you put your seed in there, stick it in a Ziploc bag, put it in the fridge for a little bit, and it germinates. And then you can put it in soil, and then you can watch it grow. So I've got like 6 apple trees in pots right now. And I can't wait to move into the new property, hopefully next month, when everything works out and we can plant those trees. We're excited about it.
Oh, I bet that is exciting. And also something that I've done this year is I planted, you know, flowers that's edible flowers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you can use them in your salads, you can
that's
use
great.
Them in your drinks, desserts, whatever. So yeah.
I know.
So you have pretty and
flavorful
edible flowers, yes.
Yeah. Very good. Good point. Well, we just started our Memorial Day sale at Apothecary Herbs. If anybody's interested, you can save 25% now through the end of May. So give us a call at 866-229-3663, thepowerherbs.com, and get empowered planting some of those, you know, make a little space in your garden there for some herbs, you know.
Thank you, Wendy.
Attract butterflies when you have those herbs in there.
That's true. Perfect timing for a great subject. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Dave and I were talking about the Mork and Mindy program during the break, and there was one person we couldn't think of because I saw Robin Williams on a Johnny Carson program. It was a YouTube lately, and it was Jonathan Winters.
Oh, yes.
Jonathan Winters. He was another...
I was picturing someone else.
Comedy just isn't the same anymore. And I don't know if that's a sign that we're getting older, or it's just a sign that comedy is just... it was a lot funnier in those days. But the talent certainly... It has changed, that's for sure. Something else that has changed, we've talked about this on this program before, and the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, released minutes this afternoon from the most recent meeting that had concluded April 29th, with the Fed's policymaking arm holding steady on the rates. And after slashing its benchmark rate to near zero, the FOMC voted to keep the rate there in that range and not move it until recovery is firmly in place, although we already hear chatterings coming from the White House about negative rates. The action came as Fed officials noted the excessive damage to the economy, and the minutes also said participants commented that, in addition to weighing heavily on economic activity in the near term, the economic effects of the pandemic created an extraordinary amount of uncertainty and considerable risks to economic activity in the medium term. So the minutes noted that the more pessimistic outlook for a rebound was probably as likely as the baseline forecast for improvement. And I would have just said a 50-50 shot, right? Dave? But in this scenario, a second wave of the coronavirus outbreak with another round of strict restrictions on social interactions and business operations was assumed to begin around year end, Dave.
Yeah, unique minutes in the sense that the Fed usually avoids these adjectives like extraordinary,
yeah,
even considerable. They either what the regardless of which way policy making is going. I mean, this was an eye opener, I believe, in terms of, you know, the Fed's perspective on just how uncertain the future is right now. Economically, I mean, the Fed sees that inducing a decrease in real GDP, a jump in the unemployment rate, and renewed downward pressure on inflation next year. That's again assuming a second wave, which they said also might discourage companies from making capital investments and rehiring workers in the near and medium terms. As far as other specific threats, the minutes noted vulnerability to the banking sector and the potential for bankruptcies from non-financial companies. We've been talking a lot about that over the last few weeks. The burden for the economic downturn, which is likely to be the worst in U.S. history this quarter, the minutes say, would fall disproportionately on the most vulnerable and financially constrained households in the economy. Financially constrained households. I guess in Fed speak, Melody, that means the poor and the working poor. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I know.
Well, interesting.
Are you done with that?
I'm done.
That gotcha, didn't it?
That's that. Yeah, the Fed speak left me a tad speechless.
I know, and while they're out there spending trillions and trillions of dollars, just as he admitted on the 60-minute interview, it's just digits we create out of thin air, and then we pass them around. It's like, yeah, that's kind of what you're doing to the stock market and everything else. I mean, it really, when you really think about how this system functions, it really is amazing.
It's like the great magicians and illusionists of the world.
It's the biggest scam of the world. And the thing of it is, they can continue to do it as long as people can be conned into believing it's real. And it's, you know, I'm sure, you know, that they're going to have other problems, but I mean, a large part of it is the amount of confidence. That's why the confidence numbers are so important. That's what con people do. And they have created the biggest con and what do they call them? Grifters? They shouldn't be politicians. They're all grifters. But anyway, so there's always more talk of needed help from the Federal Reserve and Congress to get it out of the slump. This is coming from the Dallas Fed president, Robert Kaplan. It's like, okay, yeah, well, you know, that, you know, that's rocket scientist thinking. At least some of that aid likely will need to go to state and local governments. And I also saw today that there was the first city in Alabama who filed bankruptcy today. So, of course, these state and local governments have been hampered by lost revenue during the shutdown. And Kaplan said that his comments reflect those of Fed Chair Powell, who told a Senate panel yesterday that the state and local governments that are required to balance their budgets likely will need additional aid to survive. Aid to survive without having to resort to mass layoffs. I don't think the Federal Reserve and the government can give the state and local governments enough money to keep a mass layoff from happening, you know. But that's just my thought. Kaplan said his guess is the Fed's going to need to do more. His guess is also that you're going to need more fiscal. We've talked about that. He said the problem is we're going to have an unemployment rate that peaks at around 20%. That's using their numbers. If they're saying 20, it's probably closer to 30 or more. We're going to end the year with an unemployment rate as high as 10%. I think it'll be higher than that. And we're going to need to grind that down, and it's probably going to take some fiscal action to help grind that down. 10% wasn't that much lower than what we had during the Great Recession. And this has come, and this is coming out of, you know, back into a great economy. So I guess that's another, you know, master of understatement, huh, Dave?
Yeah, really. Ironic. Oh, boy. Well, you know, the Fed has approved lending and liquidity measures totally anywhere from $2 to $4 trillion. Hard to keep track of it. Congress, in turn, approved another $3 trillion. In rescue funds, considering $3 trillion more. The Treasury Department has also provided seed money that the Fed can use to leverage up in its lending programs. Yet policymakers are being pressed to do a lot more. Kaplan said the Fed's done a lot to stabilize the markets and make sure that small companies mid-sized companies, bigger companies have access to capital. Whoopee! It's a beautiful world, Melody.
It is.
But again, he adds, these are loans. We're just the lender of last resort. Mm. And this is intended to be a bridge to when we are going to recover. Oh, God. He said success in reopening means that infections may not continue to decline, but also means that they don't spike. So I think this reopening has to happen, Kaplan added, but it's got to happen with good testing, blah, 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 blah. He said that an economic rebound is unlikely to happen until people feel safe enough to go out again. Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. Now I know why they're legalizing marijuana. Because all of these guys are smoking it. I mean, I guess, Dave, that's that sense of, you know, they need the confidence. They, you know, and, you know, regardless of what people think about President Trump, I mean, he's, I don't think he's doing a good job like he has done in the past. But he did always bring some sort of optimism. And that's what keeps things going. Optimism equals confidence, equals going out and buying things. But I don't see him doing that this time. I just, for whatever reason, he's just not in, I don't even think he's himself. And you know, we were talking about negative rates. Excuse me, traders are already pricing that in. This is according to JP Morgan Asset Management. 3-4 years down the line, if the economy is still in a very weak state, then perhaps the Fed could consider negative rates. They're talking about 3 or 4 years. And they're already pricing in the negative rates. So they're already going down that road. That 3 and 4 years, the economy is still in a very weak state. For now, he's added, they're a little more focused on the balance sheet, on their tools, rather than on negative rates. The Fed has pushed back against the need for negative rates, questioning its usefulness as investors weighed the possibility. Futures markets are pricing for that to happen, with contracts on Fed funds rates showing bets for the move in the second quarter of 2021. So people are placing their bets, Dave. The positions are showing up as companies and funds weigh how long the U.S. economy could take to recover from the coronavirus pandemic and the constant drumbeat of negative economic data. I don't think it's going to be 2021 before we get there. I think they'll have negative rates. And if you factor in inflation, aren't we already there? So to speak.
Well, we've been there. If you factor in inflation, even as low as it reportedly is, but you know, as we mentioned on yesterday's program, Powell said on Sunday that a recovery could stretch through until the end of next year. Of course, depending on the delivery of a vaccine. He also noted that negative rates were probably not an appropriate or useful policy with the distortions to markets offsetting benefits. Now, J.P. Morgan added that while it makes sense to price the tail risk of negative rates, the most central bank signals, meaning the Fed, suggest the opposite may in fact be true for now. The European Central Bank, for example, had several opportunities to cut rates again, and they haven't done it, at least yet. The same could be said of the Bank of Japan. J.P. Morgan favors 10-year treasuries as the global recession pumps up demand for sovereign debt. And speaking of treasuries, Melody, just a quick mention that today was the first U.S. Auction of 20-year Treasury bonds in over three decades. Apparently met with strong demand. They sold $20 billion of the issue at a coupon rate of 1.22%, yet there were $50 billion in orders. That's I call that strong demand. It looks as though about a quarter of the issue was bought by dealers, investment bankers primarily, direct bidders like insurance companies, pension funds, got 15% of the bonds, and indirect bidders, which include foreign countries and other foreign entities, took 64%. Interesting development.
Isn't that kind of, in a way, like robbing Peter to pay Paul to some degree? Because all of those folks, all those entities who purchased these bonds, knowing that that is money for the government to funnel back into their multinational corporations and various other financial schemes. So isn't that kind of helping their own? Or is that a stretch?
Well, you know, I apologize, but I'm not 100% sure I understand.
Well, you listened to the people who purchased those treasuries.
Oh, yes.
So all that, you know, and so they're creating money for the government, correct? The federal government? Or am I misunderstanding something?
Well, they're lending.
Right.
Yes.
So in that sense, that money just gets returned to some degree to their various entities and so forth that
to the companies?
Yeah.
The buyers who bought it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because my question is, why was there such a large interest in this?
Well, because there was, part of it, I think, is a pure supply and demand response. There just haven't been any at this level. And a lot of these companies try and smooth the risk of whatever holdings they have, particularly in, you know, if you look at their allocation of government bonds, whether they're U.S. Treasuries, agency bonds, whatever, they want a portion of short term, medium term, and long term, depending on their liquidity projections.
We'll finish this up. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this break.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And we'll move on from that. Dave kind of got where I was coming from.
Took me a while.
And it's very difficult to explain and to, you know, see what was, you know, so we can talk about that some other day, but as you said, which I wasn't sure, a lot of that money is going into the programs that Congress is now financing, Congress and the Senate, the programs, the money for the coronavirus, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. If you believe this number, and I'm not sure I do, Dave, only because nobody's working. So who's going out and getting mortgages?
Yeah, that's why it's so surprising.
Buyers are supposedly coming back to the housing market. Now, every number we read about housing and mortgages in the past, they've all been tanking. No, maybe we are at the bottom. Mortgage applications to purchase a home rose 6% last week from the previous week. Purchase volume was just 1.5% lower than a year ago. Well, that's kind of a rather stunning recovery from just 6 weeks ago when purchase volume was down 35% annually. Applications for home purchases continue to recover from April's sizable drop. And have now increased for five consecutive weeks. Let's see, states reopened, so are open houses. And mask buyers have been coming out in force. We do have record low mortgage rates. I could say there's a strong pent-up demand. People wanting to leave urban downtowns. So, you know, are driving these buyers back into the market, but I don't know. I find that a little hard to believe, but look at that as a good sign.
Yeah, I guess follow the money, right? Geez, yeah. It remains to be seen if this is simply the pent-up demand or if it becomes a long-term trend. I mean, the average interest rate for 30-year fixed mortgages decreased just 2 basis points to 3.41% last week. Still historically low, yet the low rates aren't giving current homeowners much incentive to refinance. Those applications fell for the week, but were still 160% higher than 1 year ago. Not surprising, given the fact that interest rates were almost a full percentage point higher then. But it's the lowest refinance activity in over a month. Interesting, counterintuitive, unbelievable, incredible. And yet, you know, I don't know if these numbers lie or not. It just doesn't seem right in your gut, does it?
No, I mean, you would think that if we didn't have the number of unemployed people and we were, yeah, then it would make sense and it would be good. But really? people are, I mean, how many forbearances have been filed? Millions?
4.1 million.
4.1 million? And, you know, people who are foregoing their credit card payments, their car payments. And people are out buying homes. Wow. Anyway, let's go on. This is your day for levity is golden, Dave. And yes, we're going to talk about the COVID-19, but since it's going to be about dogs and their sense of smell, why don't you tell us about it?
Well, an interesting twist to our lives at the moment. After initially fleshing out a plan to use dogs to sniff out COVID-19 patients, a big trial is going live in the UK. In a statement issued last weekend, the UK government said the research could be used as a potential new non-invasive early warning measure to detect the virus in the future. Minister for Innovation, I just love that title, Lord Bethel said biodetection dogs already detect specific cancers, and we believe this innovation might provide speedy results as part of our wider testing strategy. Accuracy is essential, so the trial will tell us whether COVID dogs can reliably detect the virus, perhaps stop it from spreading. Trials being done in conjunction with researchers at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, the charity Medical Detection Dogs, and Durham University there. It'll be backed by £500,000, or equivalent to $607,000 of government funding. Dr. Claire Guest, who's the co-founder and CEO of Medical Detection Dogs, said she was delighted the trial was starting and was optimistic the dog could aid in screening people for the disease. We have already demonstrated, she said, our expertise in canine disease with successfully training dogs, again, to detect diseases like cancer, Parkinson's, and even malaria. We apply that same science to train life-saving medical alert assistant dogs to detect odor changes in individuals caused by a health condition. Previously, Guest said she believed the dogs could screen up to, listen to this, 750 people an hour. I don't know how, but wow. The dog.
I just got a visual.
It's a vision of 750 people standing, you know, around the block with these dogs just sniffing their butts. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen.
That was my vision.
Well, interestingly, on a personal note, the dogs in the trial are a mixture of Labrador Retriever and Cocker Spaniels. My 15-year-old Daisy is one of those mixes.
Uh-huh.
The first phase of the trial will have health staff in London hospitals gather odor samples from people who are infected with the COVID-19 and those who are not. Then the six dogs in the trial will undergo a rigorous training regimen to learn to identify the virus. And I guess they're set loose to sniff. If successful, this could revolutionize and certainly simplify and even cheapen how the virus is detected. And for the record, dogs in the U.S. are also being trained to sniff out the virus. And Melody, that's this week in Levity is Golden.
Oh, Labradors and Cocker Spaniels are just great. They're great dogs.
My
little Ruby would do well. I'll tell you what, we've had wind for 3 days, strong winds. And I'll tell you what, she loves the winds because when she goes outside, it's an ordeal.
Oh.
She just stands there, puts her nose into the air, and just continues to breathe and sniff everything that's in the air. And it's just like
nothing like good sea air, bullfrogs,
yes,
deer, and all the other wildlife.
Yes. So, what else are we going to talk about today? Let's talk about the economic impact payments. Are they sending more money out? Or is this still the first?
No,
on
this is
the,
still the
1200.
First round, yeah.
Huh. Well, if you haven't received it in the form of a physical check, then you might get it on debit cards. The Treasury Department says it will issue nearly 4 million payments via prepaid Visa debit cards. You know what's funny about this? Now, the $1,200, they passed that, what, 2 months ago?
Late March. Yep.
And they're still saying that people haven't received it yet?
Just 10 million.
Just 10 million. Okay. And what's really bad is they don't have the ink to write out a check. They have to go in business with Visa to produce a debit card.
My guess is what's been happening is that they must not see the jump in economic activity and in consumer spending that they thought might occur. And maybe this is a way. I mean, this is speculation, but maybe they see the prepaid Visa card as, well, people aren't going to take the trouble to deposit that in their bank account. They're just going to use it as cash and then, you know, go to Home Depot or to get a, buy a new refrigerator or whatever. I don't know. What do you think?
I think you're on to something. Because it's like, really? And then what fee does the Treasury Department have to pay Visa? So how much more is it costing us?
That hasn't been disclosed.
Mm. But yeah, I think you're onto something, Dave. So.
Yeah, interesting development there.
Mm-hmm. I just can't believe they're still that so far behind.
Well, if you haven't gotten it, check your mail, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if it's going to come from the Department of the Treasury, Metabank, M-E-T-A, Metabank is going to start sending out the cards along with information on how to activate and use it. So if you happen to get something, I mean, you typically wouldn't throw, you're going to open something from the Department of Treasury. If you get something with Metabank on it,
yeah,
don't throw it out before you open it up. Spray it first, you know, with your favorite disinfectant. But your debit card, $1,200, could be in there. God forbid you should throw it out. How long it'll take if you ever would get a replacement card. Boy.
Well, you know that's really a good point because I don't open trash mail. I mean, something like that,
yeah.
I would have just thrown it away.
Me too.
Yeah.
There's so much of it.
And maybe that's
so
what they're counting on.
I wouldn't doubt that.
But you know what? I got my check for $1,200, and I knew there was a delay on the checks being issued because they were waiting for the signature to be printed on these checks. What I didn't know or I didn't remember was I got a letter. What, 2 weeks, 3 weeks later?
The letter from the president?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I know. The timing of that is interesting. My daughter's boyfriend got his letter under the president's signature about 10 days before his check arrived.
Oh,
And you're getting yours a couple weeks after. Gosh.
Yeah, a couple weeks after.
As long as you get the check, all right?
You know. Oh, it just irritated me. What a waste. What a waste.
That letter.
But that's just such a minimal waste compared to what government does waste. So, it's pennies. But anyway. We're beginning to see the deterioration of the relationship between the U.S. and China. That's beginning to ramp up. There's a growing possibility that the small trade truce, phase one, that Beijing and Washington agreed to in January could be undone. From what we know, there's little doubt that China is struggling to live up to its purchase commitments this year under the phase one trade deal. Chinese purchases would have to accelerate significantly to hit the deal's targets for 2020, but that's not surprising, given that the Chinese economy is still slowly emerging from their shutdown, and I guess they're going into their second shutdown now. So that's leading some to argue that the deal is poised, you know, to collapse. But what's the alternative? The reality is there isn't much that the U.S. can do right now, even as the relationship with China does deteriorate.
Well, never mind that, you know, it's essentially the U.S. deal, the president's deal. I mean, the options for action aren't all that good. Walking away would literally mean going back to Plan A, which was hitting China with more tariffs. That would mean whacking consumer goods that were lined up as targets late last year. Not a popular thing to do as we approach a presidential election half a year away. Just the suggestion of that step caused significant angst in financial markets and among consumers late last year. What would it do in the middle of this crisis? Well, it could also mean more Chinese retaliation and the loss of even any prospect of increased sales for already hurting American farmers. Truth is that because of the Northern Hemisphere's cultivation calendar, the big Chinese agricultural purchases were always going to come later this year. But walking away from a deal now after farmers have planted with the Chinese buying spree in mind would lead to a lot more migraines in just a few months from now.
Dave, it just doesn't seem like the farmers can get any breaks.
Oh, I know. I know. Let's hope that we're not looking at a, you know, record drought this year, too.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. We're at the end of the program. I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us today. And I'll be back tomorrow with Pastor Butch Paul. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.